Welcome to another episode of the Phoenix Rising Podcast. I am your host, Lisa Hillier, and today I have Christina McBoyle on the show with me. And this is the second time that Christina is on the Phoenix Rising Podcast. The first episode, episode 59, which I highly recommend you listen to, is the most downloaded episode on the whole podcast. And it is a powerful episode where we dive into all things around union of the masculine and the feminine and how we as women can really surrender into that sweet space to allow the masculine to rise. And so episode 59, it's tagged in the show notes. I definitely recommend you check it out. And Christina McBoyle is a devotional feminine arts and polarity-focused union mentor who supports women in restoring their relationship to their feminine core on all levels. This includes healing their relationship to the masculine and the father, reclaiming their birthright of embodied surrender, unlocking their feminine magnetism, releasing old somatic, spiritual, and energetic trauma, opening their wombs and awakening their life and love force via heart and pelvic floor and more. And she is a very energetic and catalyzing practitioner and soul midwife, deeply trained in the healing arts, alchemy, embodiment, and the mysteries, but is most deeply passionate about the restoration of union and devotional femininity, as well as the return of women to their most fertile and life-giving embodied feminine essence. And this episode is a little teaser before Christina and her now husband, her beloved Ryan, are on the show in a few weeks' time. And so Christina and I dive into their whirlwind romance and the preparation that Christina had to go through to receive this deeply sacred union. And it's a powerful episode. Please share it with anyone that you feel would benefit, that would resonate with this work, with these teachings around union, around the masculine and feminine coming into a cohesive, cooperative, co-creative space together. So yes, please share. Please give us a 5-star rating if it resonates and a review. It helps so much for this podcast to get out to a wider audience. And as well, if you feel called to support the podcast financially, please join the Patreon portal. There is a workshop, a previous workshop that Christina held in the Patreon portal that is ready for you to access immediately. The link is in the show notes to join the Patreon portal. As well, there are affiliate links in the show notes that you can purchase through that will also support the podcast. So please check that out. And now let's dive into all things around union and kingmaking with Christina. Okay, welcome to the podcast, Christina. And so we had our first interview over a year ago. Now, I think it was September of last year. It's been the most downloaded episode on my podcast. It's still listened to the most.
Wow.
Most days.
I didn't know that.
Recently? Yeah. I think because people are probably following your love story and then they're kind of, you know, like a little bit or maybe a lot intrigued of what's kind of emerged for you over the past year. And so let's start there. So last year, September 2022, you were single, you were on your journey, and now what does life look like for you today?
So September of last year, I had just gone through a breakup, actually, believe it or not. So I had just run one of my first rounds of KEPT. I just completed the second. I'll be opening the third one early next year. And yeah, I was really, September, I came out of that breakup, which was in August, and had a lot to process and integrate within myself, just around sort of what led to the breakup and the clarity that it brought to me around what I was really needing in relationship and union, and some of the places where I had potentially not been honest with myself when I entered into that relationship, and also so many beautiful lessons that I'm so grateful for that that I received from him and that time together. And so, yeah, when we did that interview, I think it was right after the breakup. So I was moving back into single life and really just grounding down into my purpose and my work and my mission here. And over the next few months, I did quite a few sort of bigger events and interviews. So we did our interview. I taught to a very large audience for In Service to Union on 11/11 for Shanti and Aizen. I just had Aizen come and guest teach today on one of my programs as well, for one of my programs. So yeah, I had a bunch of, I would say just different offerings that I was putting out into the world where I was alchemizing and sort of channeling what I had learned through my own experiences and through my service work and everything I was doing on my platform. I was just channeling it into passion projects and wanting to share my teachings with the world. And that was kind of the first time I really, I would say, poured myself into that fully and kind of redirected away from my own personal love life and love story into kind of, I would say, transmuting some of my resistance to taking my platform a little bigger and like sharing my teachings a little more far and wide. I had been pretty resistant to that. And I just kept receiving a lot of feedback from people that I needed to, you know, I would say, go a little deeper and show up more, let myself be seen more, so to speak, and not be afraid of growing my audience through the depth of my teachings, not so much just for the sake of it, but more so spreading the messages I was bringing further and wider. And I had been very, very resistant to that. So right around that time and into the end of the year, I really chose purposefully to take things next level in my business and in my service. And I also sort of came out around some of the things that I was teaching underground or behind the scenes, so to speak. I was kind of not really very open about that. And that led to me birthing an offering in May of this year called Kingmaking. It was the first masterclass that I ran around that, which I'm now running in immersion, focused on Kingmaking as well. But essentially, I went through a breakup, I channeled and alchemized all of that into service work, into, you know, again, taking my message to a wider audience. And that led me to also come out more about some of my lesser known teachings that I was definitely teaching for a while, but just not as openly. It was a little edgier for me to come out around some of those more oracular teachings, more spiritual, like very advanced. And the lineages behind that have been very well sort of protected and hidden, because there's a lot of forces in this world that seek to keep that knowledge and wisdom from people. So I was sort of hesitant to bring some of these things out to the world because of knowing kind of the spiritual warfare that would sort of expose me to. And I was already navigating quite a bit of that in my work. So teaching about union also tends to attract spiritual warfare. So all of that being said, long story short, all of that led to me birthing what I would call like my deepest, most powerful work. And when I finally submitted to that and brought that forward in my business, that was what attracted my union and my husband, was me fully choosing my purpose, my service, that aspect of, you know, my relationship to the masculine, which was a deep submission to God, so to speak, of I'm here to be used for your service. I'm willing to do whatever you want me to do and to actually bring out these deeper offerings that I've been scared to bring to the public because I've been kind of protecting myself and not wanting to be exposed as, you know, a more oracular woman who is doing really deep spiritual work in her offerings as well. And ultimately, my choice to do that is what brought my husband to me. So it was all kind of a like chain series of events that led me to now, yeah, just having gotten married for the first time on October 1st, the second time hand fasted in Scotland on November 2nd. And my husband is now living with me, and we were married within 6 weeks of meeting.
Wow. I didn't realize it was within 6 weeks. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very rare sort of timeline that we've had.
Just a total whirlwind romance.
Very much so.
Which just feels so fitting for you and the work that you do. Like,
yeah,
kind of a normal relationship would be.
You know, it's true. Looking back now, I'm like, I don't think it would have made any sense for me to be in a normal relationship. And I also think this is why I had to wait so long for union, for my own union. You know, I've been teaching around it for many, many years, but I think it's because it is such a rare love story, and our relationship, our soul contract, our union is very rare. And because of that, I had to work for it. I had to clear a lot out of the way. I had to align to that caliber of love and devotion.
I think from the outside, people think that it's just this whirlwind romance that just like I've had friends message me and be like, oh, don't you wish this like beautiful romance like Christina's would just come like to that person messaging me? And it's like, well, I don't know. But I'd imagine there were some big initiations that you had to go through to get to that. You know, on Instagram and those places, we only see the beautiful end result, but there's usually a shit ton of hurdles. Yes. I don't know. That's the word that's coming to mind. But, you know, things that we have to go through to get to that place.
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, we look forward to sharing more of our story really soon because, I would say we both, to be totally transparent, we both went through the fires of hell and back to get to each other. And that is like being very, very honest about it. The reality is it looks romantic, and it is. It's been, you know, miraculously romantic in so many ways. If I told some even just pieces of, you know, how we came together and how he drove 14 hours from Sedona to claim me, and, you know, just like literal things out of storybooks. You know, I had a sword that was in my earth that I had put my elven sword in the earth of my home, claiming like my territory. And I had like prayed to God, basically saying, only I can pull this out of the earth, or my husband, the man who fully claims me, and no one else. Otherwise, the sword stays in the earth, anchoring my teachings, the body of work that I'm bringing forth in the world. And yeah, I mean, literally the night that he claimed me and made me his, he went out to that sword, pulled it out of the earth, is in my yard completely naked, and like pulls the sword out of the earth. And, you know, literal things that you couldn't even conceptualize being real, and told me, you're mine. And, you know, at that point, he had already told me I was his wife. And this was the first time we met in person. So these are things that you hear and you're like, oh my gosh, it's so romantic. It's so beautiful. It's so all of these things. And yeah, the very real initiatory fires we both have had to endure leading up to coming into union, and also choosing this union, has asked us both to be stripped before God of everything that wasn't in alignment. And I just recently posted about this on my stories and kind of have been sharing little snippets here and there. But the reality is the months leading up to meeting Ryan were some of the hardest months of my life. I mean, very, very difficult. I had physical health stuff happening because I was sleeping on a bed, a mattress that was covered in mold underneath it. I didn't know. And for months, like who knows how long I was sleeping on this thing. So I was having all these issues. I didn't know where it was coming from. I hadn't found the source. I had to move homes and I couldn't find a new home. There were just so many things happening. And everything was like in total upheaval. Meanwhile, I was having all of these visions and dreams kind of hinting that he was coming, but I wasn't really in a space where I was grasping onto that, because I was in the literal throes of deep change and, you know, deep internal transmutation and external shifting as well. And yeah, so ultimately it was a very humbling time. And by the time he came, I think a lot of things made sense to me. But even leading up to that, there were, I mean, I would say, to be honest, maybe even 3 weeks before I met him, I remember being on a Zoom call with one of my closest male friends and literally like crying, bawling and feeling hopeless because I was going through so much. And I was also serving very intensely at that time. And a part of me was like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. Like, I'm exhausted. I'm helping all these people. Like, where is my union? Like, I want to give up, you know, just like very, very humbling, dark night of the soul period for me. And yeah, then when he arrived, it was like, I looked back and I saw how I was being cleared out. I mean, there were relationships that were out of alignment that had to leave. There were like things that all happened very quickly over many months where just the purification was very strong. And same goes for Ryan. You know, he'll share more of his story, but he went through a lot leading up to me as well. And then even after he met me, he had to leave his whole life behind. You know, he moved here from Sedona. He shifted a lot very quickly to bring forth this union and actualize it in the physical. So I would say amongst all of the romance and the beauty of it, it's like the real truth is, there have been a lot of consistent initiations for us to refine us enough to be able to hold what this union is for us and for the world.
Hmm. There's two questions I want to ask. Remember last time when you were on the podcast, we talked about twin flames?
Yes. Yeah, I remember.
Has your take on that changed? Because I know there had been a couple relationships in your life that felt like twin flame.
Yeah.
Does Ryan feel like a twin flame or does it feel like a different soul contract?
That's a great question. So what I'll say about that is what I still believe is there's kind of a two-part answer to this, and it's kind of a both and. Like there's a part of me that feels differently and there's a part of me that doesn't. The part of me that doesn't feel differently is that I do believe that the term twin flame is sort of a hijacked term. Like it's really been taken and turned into something that it's not, and like used as this kind of hook in the new age spiritual community of like kind of normalizing trauma bonding and like karmic relationships and things like that. And the reality is I don't believe that it's healthy to be in a union with someone that we're calling our twin flame when there's like all of this trauma bonding and like, you know, very intense back and forth kind of like whatever it might be. Like, I feel like there are relationship templates like that. And I would say that I still believe that what people think of when they hear the word twin flame is a little bit hijacked and distorted. But what I do believe now that has shifted a little bit, and I'll kind of deepen my response as I'm sharing more about what I mean by this, but I do feel that we have soulmates that when we meet them, and that we don't not like, I would say we have more than one soulmate, but like soul, I'll say soul flame as a distinguisher, is like a very deep dharmic relationship where when we meet this person, it is like a reunion for the soul. It's like Ryan and I, part of our story is like, we literally recognized each other right away. Like we recognized each other before we met in the physical, but then the first moment we were together in the physical and we laid eyes on each other, some of his first words to me were, I know this face. And it was just like this deep recognition. Otherwise, there's no way we would have been able to get married so quickly. Like we came together and our souls were like, oh, okay, like we're done. Like this is it. We didn't need all of these vetting tools and confirmation and like, let's date for months and try and figure it out. It was like, our souls were just like, oh, you're the one I've been waiting for. Like unquestionably. And it didn't mean there weren't edges to that or challenges or difficulties of like, wait, like now I have to get to know you. And like, I feel like I've known you forever, but on human time, we don't know anything about each other. So there's been this kind of interesting dance in it. But, I would say before him, I kind of was questioning, like I felt like I was going to wind up in just a very polarized union and marriage that was like, you know, more traditional in a lot of ways. And the truth is like, we have that, we're very polarized, but the reality is like the level of soul mirroring between us is very strong and very confronting in moments, because there's a level to the soul bond where there's a sharp, clean mirror that we hold to each other. that is less about the polarity and more about the soul mate relationship, where we have kind of been assigned to be each other's greatest teachers. And we have had to learn that dance together of how do we balance having polarity and having this like masculine, feminine, more traditional dynamic, which we both believe very strongly in, and we have the same values. But at the same time, there's this soulmate mirroring that's like, wow, we're almost the same in some moments. We're like the same person in some ways, but different, right? Polarized. Like he's the male version of me in some ways. And in other ways, we have our differences, our polarized aspects where we are very different because I'm a woman and he's a man. But there's a mirroring between us that I've only experienced that in an unhealthy way in this life, meaning I've never experienced the healthy version of that where it's very nourishing and activating. And of course, it can be really hard and confronting if you're in resistance to it, but it doesn't feel toxic if we're both, you know, really responsible for ourselves and the intensity of that mirroring. It's very nourishing, like I said, but also, what is the word I'm looking for? It's generative. So it's not destructive. It's the opposite. It's generative. And I think that what some people have come to learn about these twin flame relationships is this like normalization of a destructive relationship, when in reality, relationships can be so incredibly hard and so confronting in what they bring up. But if we are in a healthy soul contract with someone and we're doing our work and they're doing theirs, it can be very generative to have that strong mirror. And I think some people are, you know, sort of romanticizing a more destructive form of that where there's a lot of trauma bonding. And like I mentioned, mm-hmm. I don't think that is, yeah, that's not the kind of relationship a lot of people want, but they wind up in these kind of karmic relationships and use the word twin flame to kind of, create this like glamorization around it. So all of that to say, like, I would not call him my twin flame, but would I call him like my mirror? Absolutely. He's definitely my mirror, and almost like uncomfortably so in some moments where I've watched myself sort of fight these aspects of myself through him, right? Like, wow, I'm meeting myself in a man in a lot of ways. And yet it's not twin flamey in the sense of like, we are very polarized and like we have, you know, a structure within that in our relationship that doesn't feel like just this explosive coming together and like, oh, push pull. Like we have our issues, but it generally, we're both very clear that a lot of the difficulties are just aspects of ourselves being met in one another.
It felt like there's not that runner, chaser, avoidant, anxious, you know, like in, out thing that can happen so often with twin flames. And maybe those previous relationships that felt twin flame-ish like crumbled all those places within you so that it can come into this really generative space.
Well, and same for him. He has a really powerful story with that as well. You know, there were relationships we both had and kind of similar too, that prepared us for one another.
I love that, like preparing each other's hearts for one another. That's absolutely beautiful.
Absolutely.
What was the biggest hurdle, would you say, that you had to go through from that time, like September last year, till union? Was there one specific hurdle that felt like the last piece of glass that had to like shatter?
That's a great question. I would say the one that had to shift right before I met him, and there was more than one, but I would say the one right before I met him, there were two, and they kind of happened around the same time. One was I kind of mentioned this a little bit before, but I'll expand upon it. There was a part of me that was resisting my own purpose. And if we're looking at that as my relationship to the masculine internally within myself and my own life in a way, like this, you know, there was my, like, I relate to my feminine energy from a space of love and connection and intimacy and union. And like, those are the parts of me that I relate to through my feminine soul, right? But in my relationship to the masculine internally, there was an aspect of me that was resisting the purpose placed upon me by God, because there was a, I would say there was a little bit of an internal war going on, a part of me that would just was feeling so ready to be in union and also, you know, very surrendered to God's timing in that. But definitely there was a place of feeling like I had been spending so much time and energy serving and teaching and doing all these things. And I'm very passionate about that. And I have so much reservoirs of energy for that within me. But at the same time, there was a threshold in myself I hadn't been willing to cross, where it was like, I would walk up to it and I would be on the edge of this cliff and I would feel the voice of God encouraging me to leap and fully choose my own work and purpose and show up more powerfully and be seen in that instead of sort of hiding. There was a part of me that was still hiding. And I was, yes, sharing my work with the world, but not the deeper aspects of my work. I wasn't fully owning myself in that. And I wasn't fully choosing the path God had laid out for me. So I was in resistance and I was in this back and forth battle. And because purpose is such a masculine essenced thing, there was an aspect of me that was not ready to fully receive a man so powerfully rooted in his vision and his purpose and his mission spiritually as Ryan is up until that moment, because I wasn't really a match for it. I wasn't fully choosing my own purpose, right? I was kind of in this waffling energy. So I kept attracting similar things in some ways, men that were sort of ready to commit, not really, right? Or like kind of choosing their own purpose, but kind of not really. And having met Ryan now, I'm like, oh my gosh, it makes so much sense, because he is so intensely clear about like what he wants and when he wants it. And like, it's, you know, when we met within a day or so, like 2 days, maybe 2-3 days, he was like, I'm coming to see you. We're going to meet in person. This is what we're doing. Like, just very clear of the trajectory and like his vision and, you know, very clear leadership. And I wasn't holding that within myself. I wasn't in integrity with myself and with God. So I was kind of in this like, yeah, sort of half-hearted energy. And there was a part of me that recognized that and had to go through this death process of really surrendering my own desires and preferences of timing and how things were going to play out. And within that, I fully chose to birth two offerings I had been resisting bringing forward. One of those is the kingmaking immersion that I'm now running, and like the masterclass that led up to that. And it was as if when I made that choice, it opened the door to him. And I literally remember everything shifting in the spiritual plane for me when I did that. Like, the vision started coming in, dreams of him started coming in. It was like I unlocked something as soon as I fully chose my path with God and set aside my own preferences and desires for when and how my union showed up, or if it even would. And I remember literally having a moment where I was crying on my knees and basically saying to God, okay, I give in. Like, if I'm not supposed to be in physical union in this life, so be it. I will keep leading people to union despite that. And it was like this deep sort of sacrificial, but also devotional moment between me and God, where I just finally, like, a part of me gave in, which I feel like can be true surrender in moments. In some moments, it's like this, it feels like a collapse, but it's not. It's like a deep letting go of the parts of us still grasping and holding on to how we want it to be, which creates space for God's will to show up. And the truth is like, Ryan has very big energy. He's very intense like me. And if I had been in that kind of half-hearted, sort of diluted, like, I'm kind of choosing it, I'm kind of not, there's no way I could have magnetized him, because he fully chose me immediately, right? That's the kind of energy he came in with. It wasn't this kind of like, yeah, maybe let's get to know each other, you can be my girlfriend. From the very get-go, he was like, this is the game I'm playing. You're either in or you're out. Like, either you're my wife or you're not. And we're going to meet and we're going to decide. Like, we're going to figure it out once we meet in person. but like, we're not having sex unless you are, which I was on the same page with that as well. It was just that, like, that was the kind of game he was playing from the get-go. So it was like, I had to align to that internally to receive him. And it took however long it took, but once I did, it was very quick. Meaning once he came in, as I mentioned, yeah, we were married within 6 weeks. So it was a very deep kind of death process I had to go through. And there were other pieces that had to fall into place, you know, but that was a big one. I mean, I literally had to move homes and come into a bigger space to receive him physically. So on every single level, I had to create more space, and I had to sort of align my own relationship to the masculine internally to the same caliber and frequency that he was holding.
Hi, loves. Just interrupting this episode for a quick moment to talk about a product that I have been using over the past couple months on my healing journey, and it's castor oil packs, and they are amazing. So amazing. I highly, highly recommend castor oil packs. Queen of the Thrones is my go-to. The castor oil is organic, as well as the packs are organic cotton, and they are so easy to use. And I mostly use the liver pack on the right side, as well as one for my neck for the thyroid. But there are many, many different packs that you can use, and castor oil has so many, so many health benefits. And so with the link in the show notes, you can get a 10% discount by using code LisaHillier10. And I would love to hear how your healing journey goes with the castor oil pack. So please let me know. And as well, the castor oil is amazing when navigating perimenopause and menopause. It helps so much to balance your hormones. So definitely check it out.
I love that you had to move and make more space for him to come in. Like, there's so many little nuggets that had to happen for the union to come to fruition. Do you want to speak to kingmaking and what? I had Alison Armstrong on the podcast.
Oh, amazing.
A couple weeks ago, and she talks about like frog farming, you know, like making men frogs. King making feels like the opposite. And so as a woman, what has to internally shift so that we're making kings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful question. Well, ultimately, a woman, I would say the first thing, and there's kind of a series of layers here probably that want to be shared, but I would say the first thing is that a woman has to first and foremost release her intention and desire to make a man a king, which is really hard for women who desire that and also, you know, maybe have done a lot of work on themselves and have gotten to a certain place, and then they meet a man and, oh, I want him to be on my level, or I want him to be spiritual and conscious and all of these things. And they have a long list, and I want him to show up in all these ways. And so then they meet a man, and it's like this part of them comes out that feels like they want to make or shape or mold him into the man that they see in his potential, like through their vision. Oracularly speaking, we do have the capacity as women to hold this highest vision for a man and his mission and his purpose and who he is as a king or a warrior king, like these refined, like divine masculine templates. We can see them oracularly in men, and women do have this pure devotional desire. A lot of women do, like even if it's layered under or kind of buried under layers of other things like graspiness and personal expectations and all of that, they're usually underneath all of that is this deep devotional impulse and drive to serve the masculine and to support men on their journey to becoming kings. But if a woman hasn't released her own kind of manipulative aspects or egoic aspects or personal agendas that lead her to want to make a man into a king, she actually can't be a kingmaker, because within that there's this sort of, I would say, this kind of assumption that we're doing something when we are kingmaking as women, like we're the ones doing it. And the reality is we're not, because the only one who can make a man a king is God. Like, he has to be able to be on his journey as a man to becoming a king between him and God alone. And a lot of women actually step between a man and God when they're trying to make him into a king, right? Like, they literally try to take the sword from him and like, let me do this for you. Let me help you. And it's actually like cutting his balls off, so to speak. It's actually emasculating him. So in reality, even though I teach an immersion called kingmaking, one of the first things I teach is, well, guess what? If you're trying to make a man a king, you're not kingmaking, because you're already in this posturing of I'm doing it. And in truth, the way that women become kingmakers is through our posturing of descent, where we literally surrender into our own heart and womb so deeply that we become vessels for God to move through for these men. And our personal desires and agendas have nothing to do with it. And in fact, it's when we get out of the way completely that the most miraculous things happen. Because when we're standing between a man and God, we're actually like, we're literally blocking him from becoming a king. We think we're helping. We think we're serving him. Oh, I'm helping him. I'm serving him. And actually, it's through our deepest receptive posturing of letting go and surrendering and letting God have his way, you know, letting the divine have its way with men, which sometimes does happen through us, oracularly speaking. But a woman can't access that if she's trying to change or fix or heal or help a man. It's when we actually step back and we are in our own devotional posturing of descent, where we are so surrendered into our feminine core that the natural sort of will of God moves through us as embodied love, as truth, through the oracle of our wombs, through our open heart, through our open womb. The divine works through us for them. But it is a deep devotional surrendering that gets us there. It's actually not an intervention. And a lot of women think they need to intervene, but it actually has the opposite effect. It's like you're taking his sword away from him. He has to pick up the sword and like fight the demon himself. And it's through you actually stepping down and stepping back and deeply trusting him, deeply supporting him, deeply encouraging him, devotionally loving and serving him against your own preferences, even if it hurts you both. Meaning sometimes my desires and preferences are the opposite of what wants to happen. And I've been learning this already again and again in my marriage with Ryan. It's like, I might think this is the way we should go, or I want to go this way, or this is what I think is best for him. But it's through my total surrender and trusting God that I actually get to witness him rise as a king. And again, letting go of how I thought it should look or how it should be, and constantly getting humbled myself in that process, right? It's not this like elevated posturing of I'm so powerful as a woman, I'm making him a king. It's actually one of the most humbling journeys that we can go through as a woman who is, you know, basically our womb is the throne seat for his king. But that means we have to descend fully and let go of a lot and go through a lot of death processes ourselves for him to rightfully, you know, take the seat of that throne and rise as king. It only comes through our stepping down and back and letting go and surrendering again and again, and like more deeply and more deeply and more deeply. And a lot of women struggle with that because there are ego deaths for us through this process, where we get to witness and sort of support him in his rising, but it's not for us. And that's what a lot of women struggle with letting go of, is I want him to be a king so that I get to receive the benefits of that. And the truth is, it's never about us. It's not about us and what we want. And when we can let go of that, they actually do get shaped into their highest essence by God through the posturing we're holding within ourselves. It massively supports and nourishes that in them. We still can't do it for them, right? Like, they still have to go to war. we can't stop them from that. But the way in which we support them and nourish them and receive them and witness them, and sometimes, unfortunately, when the oracle is moving through us in a certain way, like there are aspects of him as a man that have to be destroyed, right? And that's not always comfortable for our human selves as women, because again, it's not about us. It's not about what we want. It might look uncomfortable in the relationship itself to hold that space for what needs to unfold and happen for him as a man, as a king. Like, again, my human woman has to get out of the way to allow this to happen. And a lot of women are too fearful or graspy to let that happen, because they want him to show up as a king for them, as opposed to he needs to be that for the world so that he can go serve on the front lines of the spiritual battles that are happening in the world. And again, in not making it about myself. And then, yes, do I receive the benefits of that down the line? Absolutely. But that's not the point of kingmaking in any way, shape, or form. It's actually just to serve and support a man in his walk with God. And the humility required in that for a woman is vast.
What shows up for women, like with the women that you work with, what's kind of the number one thing that shows up for women that stops them from fully surrendering and submitting to God?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say a big common one is deep anger and rage or grief or abandonment towards the masculine and ultimately towards God and towards life. And the way that I look at this is Jillian Ponthier talks about this a lot, about how when women have difficulties trusting men, it's actually a crisis of faith. Like, it means we actually have difficulties trusting life and trusting God, because God in life will operate through the embodied truth that moves through men in their, you know, masculine core. Just like for part of my teachings, I teach that women are the embodiment of love. Men are the embodiment of truth. That's the kind of Eros Logos balance, right? So when we're in our open heart and womb as women, we are the embodiment of love and Eros. And for men, they are more the embodiment of Logos, which is pure truth and consciousness and pure awareness. And for us as women to face that and how it moves through men means we have to be trusting enough of God in life to be able to receive that distilled truth as it moves through them, right? Like, as the sword of truth moves through them, it's not always going to feel comfortable. And a lot of women have deep trauma or pain or abandonment or grief or anger towards men, towards God, towards life. And it creates this protective mechanism of closing their hearts and wombs, which is natural, right? It's like, I don't feel safe to open that deeply. And the truth is, in our core essence as women, we are vastly open beings. We are very receptive. And that is terrifying to the parts of us that are traumatized or have been hurt or wounded in our openness. If we've opened wide and then something bad has happened, or we've been harmed, or we've had some kind of horrible experience or breakup or abuse or loss that we haven't grieved and felt fully, it feels too excruciating to be open as women. And so that level of openness is what's required of kingmaking, like what I teach in kingmaking. And so to get there, we literally have to face all of these places within ourselves that are still armoring and protecting and closing and pushing away life, pushing away God, are fearful of life, pushing away men, right? All these different things. And it happens to all of us in so many different ways, right? So, like, literally, there's no woman I know that doesn't have this in some way. Even myself, having done work around this for many years, I then meet my husband and get to face these parts of myself all over again as I'm invited into even deeper surrender and submission and trust. I then get to see all the places where there are still these holding patterns, contractions, fears, you know, protective mechanisms that feel very safe, but are actually holding me from my depth of openness and receptivity as a woman and as a vessel.
Yeah, it feels like the world or the programming, there's a narrative out there in the world that is really feeding into that distrust.
Yes.
Of the masculine. And so how do we discern away from that? You know, what are kind of the narratives that are out there that are keeping women more and more and more separate from men or pushing them away even more? And what is that first step to healing the trust with men?
Yeah, this is a great inquiry, because I think that it's important for us, for women, to even recognize what you're speaking to, like to even recognize that this is happening and that there are literal programs in place, conditioning, systems, structures that ultimately are working hard to keep men and women severed and separated from each other, to keep union in this state of severance, right? So part of what that those systems and structures and programs and paradigms do is create a lot of demonization towards men's primal aspects. And that's actually what we need the most within the template of the Warrior King, which is what the world truly needs more of right now, and what women actually hunger for more of. Even if they're scared of it or resistant to it or angry at this aspect, they also desire it very deeply, right? So the first step is for women to even recognize that there's an actual war on masculinity and on femininity and on us coming together in that union, which we spoke about in the first podcast, and being able to see all the different ways that still plays out around them in society, in their surroundings, in their conversations, even with girlfriends or other women, and the ways in which these programs are being reinforced all around. And then within that, our own traumas will reinforce and justify those places. So to give an example, even for someone who, say, has more awareness and respect and reverence for the more primal aspects of men and welcomes it and is welcoming of the sword or their edge or their primality, their intensity, even for someone like that, if a man then brings that energy into her space or her field and it hits up against her father wounds or places where she still feels this deep sense of a lack of safety with an intense, direct, fierce masculine energy, she might immediately contract and view him as attacking her, right? And create this victim perpetrator kind of dynamic. Even in relationship, this happens a lot, right? Where you see men and women getting into these conflicts because there's a difficulty in both of them of being able to receive and dance with each other's differences, right? And to alchemize that into creative energy versus war energy, because it can become both, and the passion of that can like turn into many things, right? So it has to be channeled properly. So ultimately, one of the things I sort of help women do is not only sort of pinpoint where this programming still lives and operates, all the different forms that it shows up in, even within ourselves, and then starting to work with our own ability to soften into and receive the sword aspect of masculine energy, the primality, the directness, the intensity of it, the edge of it, but also the provision and protection of that, and how deep within our fear there's longing, there's desire. And if we can work with surrender within ourselves in a safe space, which is what I hold for women, we can find our way back to the eros and the desire that is underneath our fear or our anger or our grief or whatever it is. It's like a peeling back of all the layers that society reinforces or that our own traumas reinforce within ourselves to get to that deep, receptive, magnetic eros underneath that is so hungry for those masculine aspects, the warrior king, the primality, the protection, all of those things that this, you know, expression of the masculine brings forward. And I would say the first step in all of that for women is really seeing clearly themselves within this conversation. Where are they still holding trauma or pain or grief or anger? Like, how does it show up? How does it express? Like, when do they notice it arising? And how does it, you know, take form within them, so that they're not just looking outside in the world and viewing things from an external perspective, like say the war going on, you know, right now, viewing it from this external perspective, but what is that mirroring within themselves? So where are they still at war with this aspect of the masculine instead of like really being able to come into union and harmony and support of the protection of the masculine, which we need to go to war for us. If we're going to war with him, we can't, you know, really receive the provision of him going to war out in the world for us. So starting to really reflect on that. And I would say working, you know, internally with trauma release therapies, emotional release, things that help move energy and emotion around the stuck places where there's still resistance or fear around their desires or need or longing. Because as we orient and shift into that space of desire, longing, hunger, like these more, I'll just say these deeper feminine frequencies underneath the anger or the fear or the grief or whatever, the closure, the contraction, that already opens us to receive a totally different template with the masculine, which then ripples into our exchanges with men, which touches and shifts them in their relationship to the feminine. It creates this big, wide ripple effect in the collective when we're looking from the inside out at these systems and these patterns, and not from a mental heady space, but from a felt space of, okay, where is there deep pain or loss or rage that needs to be felt within me in relationship to this, so that I can start to develop a clean relationship with the masculine externally in order to come into like right relationship with him from the inside out.
Yeah. Feels like the greatest work.
Yes.
Right now for women and even for men, just on how to even notice within themselves where they're holding themselves back from that king
absolutely.
Archetype and stepping like into that full provider. It feels like there's a pull for them that's leading them closer to that, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. That union is like the greatest gift to the world. Can you share the prayer that you used to call in your beloved?
Sure. Yeah. So the prayer that I use, let's see if I can get the exact one. I still have it. So essentially it was a prayer to God that I wrote that said, may the perfect man that you have for me step forward in total integrity and long lost love.
I love that.
It's very simple, but I was holding that prayer very powerfully and essentially was handing it over to him, to like handing it over to God, to the divine. And I was very clear though in the integrous peace, and then that soul recognition of like long lost love of like, oh, I've known you for a long time. And those were the exact ways in which he stepped forward.
That's so beautiful. And just the power of prayer and how it can come forward in our life in a really beautiful way. Do you have any offerings coming up, love? I feel like this is a teaser because we're going to do a full interview with Christina and Ryan.
We're going to do our shared interview. So I have, I'm running two offerings, Kingmaking, the Covenant of the Blue Rose immersion, and Sword of the Rose, which is an advanced oracular training. I will most likely be running those again next year sometime, but right now I'm about to early registration launch for KEPT, the third round of KEPT that I'll be running the beginning part of next year. And this has now become like my signature mastermind, especially for women who are on this journey that we've been speaking to, because it's my longest mastermind and we just go very deep. It's very comprehensive, you know, it's everything from, you know, working on our relationship to God, to our feminine aspect, to opening our womb, to our relationship to men, our relationship to all their different expressions, the warrior king, the father, the beloved, like all these different pieces. It's very, very comprehensive. And it's a very intimate group, and we go very deep for many months. And it's a very powerful sisterhood space as well. So there's a lot of healing that happens because women are healing their relationship to sisterhood and to the feminine, and very deeply working within their relationship to the masculine. And a lot of my kept ladies will get engaged or married or have these miraculous things happen when they're in my container. So it's a really beautiful space. And we always, it's developed a community now of devotional women. And I'm actually looking to sometime next year do a retreat as well in person, which will be the first time I've ever done something that big. So it'll be probably first and foremost open to people who are in deep containers with me, so that they kind of know what they're in for, because it will be a very deep space to come together in community. So I'll be running Kept again early in the year. And I believe that my husband is going to help me create an online version of that for those who are not quite ready for like the full immersive big investment experience, but they still want to receive those teachings deeply. So I'll probably have a sort of online version, like a smaller, but still, you know, significant version of Kept available as well. And I'm sure my husband and I will also be offering some things in the new year, but we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, it feels like it's destined to happen.
Yes.
That you'll have some sort of creation all around union.
Yes, and definitely.
That powerful,
yeah,
sacred union.
Yeah, we definitely have. We've, you know, opened up some very select spots for like private support for those who are wanting support from both a man and a woman who are holding this union template. But eventually I'm sure we'll take that bigger once we've integrated our own story as well.
Yeah. And where can everybody find you?
So the best place is just on Instagram under Solar Feminine Arts right now. And eventually I'll have a website. We're working on that as well. But right now the best place is through Instagram. They can find everything about my offerings, and usually the most recent up-to-date things are there.
Okay, beautiful. And it'll be in the show notes. Thank you, love. And I'm excited for when you and Ryan are on the show.
Yeah, we're so excited. We're very excited to share more about our story once we've just had a few more weeks to integrate it ourselves. We've been doing a lot of traveling, so we're kind of just now grounding it home together.
Yeah, and I love that you had two weddings and a hand fasting ceremony.
Yes.
So Outlander.
Yeah, it was very Outlander. There's actually one photo from our hand fasting ceremony where we look very, like, I haven't shared it yet. We look very Jamie and Claire.
That's amazing. So good. Well, thank you, love, and I'll look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's always such an honor to be on here with you, Lisa. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for joining me for an episode of the Phoenix Rising podcast. Please like, share, download, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode, and I will see you next week for another episode on the Phoenix Rising podcast. Sending so much love.